You're listening to Suzette Live Talk. Broadcasting from Southern California every Sunday night at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is Internet Live Radio. Thank you for listening all across the nation and beyond. Join me, Suzette LT, and share your comments and opinions by dialing 619-924-0847 every Sunday night at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, blogtalkradio.com, Suzette Live Talk. Welcome. I'm Suzette LT. It's Saturday night. This is my new day and time that you will be listening to this fabulous show. With events and topics, big and small, we'll discuss them all. If you'd like to participate in the discussion or topic, make a comment, have a question, I'll even let you rant. But I have to apply the 3-second rule to that. So dial 619-924-0847. Again, 619-924-0847. And tonight, line up. In order to be informed before being reformed, we're going to talk about clickbait and how it's threatening the internet freedoms. We're going to go into that. Also, affairs involving U.S. Congress, FCC, and the Internet, and Internet surface and below, exploring the rabbit hole. As you notice, there is a common theme all having to do with the Internet, something that most of us use every day, some of us every day of every minute, some not so much. Nevertheless, it affects you. And the last topic there, as far as exploring the rabbit hole, well, there might be some interesting things that you'll find that you didn't know before. And then again, you may have. So we'll get into it here. We have, with the clickbait, alrighty, let's see here. How many have you been duped into clicking on something and then it having being redirected over to another dummy site? Something has nothing to do with what you clicked on. And then there are times when you do believe you're actually there on that site, but nothing happens. You try and click on something and nothing. You move your mouse around and things may highlight, but you click on it and nothing. Yes. Well, those sites have been hijacked. Unfortunately, though, if you've never visited that site in particular before, then, you know, that site risks the chance of you never revisiting it because of your bad experience the first time. And that's unfortunate. I know I've done it a few times myself, and sometimes if I have the time or if I'm researching or looking for that item, that particular topic or whatever it was, I'll go back just to see what happens. If it happens again, then I never go back. That's it. Done. Some people get frustrated. Others may get to the point of being maddened because it happens over and over to them. Not on the same side, of course, but, you know, several times in a day could be more than annoying. It's maddening. So the internet began as a free and open technology for the exchange of information, as most of us know. But it didn't take long before becoming a commercial industry. I know you know what I mean, what I'm talking about, what I'm saying. Ads, ads, ads. Everywhere you look are ads. I swear there are more ads on the internet now than ever in television. I mean, television is getting pretty bad as well. The programming, a 30-minute program, really, in actuality, ends up being about 20 minutes. a 45, 50 minute, or an hour long ends up being 45, 50 minutes long. And you kind of feel cheated. It's not much, but, you know, in the end, it could mean finding out what happened to who, or new science technology or whatever floats your boat that you're watching on television at the time. Could mean more content if it wasn't for ads. And I get people have to make money and stuff, but a lot of people had turned to the internet to get away from the ads. It's part of the free and open internet. Almost every single website that you visit nowadays, unless it's a blog that's not monetized in any way, you're going to find ads. Some of them just pop up out of nowhere and take up your entire page when you're trying to get to something, maybe in a hurry, or you're really interested, you want to read it, and then all of a sudden your page disappears and it's got this big ad in front of it. Now you got to click it closed. And hopefully it will close and not take you to another website, which that happens too. They're set up to do that. Annoying? Yes. Completely. Completely annoying. Annoying, but seriously. Commercial, ad companies, marketing companies, you can't get away from it. It's very difficult to escape it. Unless you visit the rabbit hole. Do we dare? Maybe. We'll get more into that later on. This evening. In the meantime, we're going to get to some clickbait here. You might see my slides and the photos I have lined up and what they look like and give you an idea. Sometimes they'll either offer a quiz or a shocking topic, something that's trending and makes that explosive. I mean, I don't even call it mainstream. The media has a big habit of doing that these days. And unfortunately, there are the saps that fall for it. And then there are others who are informed, just like you. Informed before reformed. Moving on here. I see you've got a couple of chatters there. Hello. Let's see. Getting for USA. All right. Terrific. Ad blocker. Do I have ad blocker on? No. Oh, yes, the ad blocker. You know what? They don't all work. I have one on my when I use Google. I don't have one for when I use Edge, but yes, that does work to an extent, and I love it. But then you have all these busy pages, so then you've got to get another app that makes your page so it takes all that away, so you can actually read the article. It's bigger and gets rid of all the mishmash. But it just would just totally be nice to just be able to click and read and not be distracted or have to do the ad blocker, or, you know, I think it would just be nice not to have to bother. But yes, thank you for mentioning that. There are ad blockers, no doubt. And they do work. But you have to be careful with some of the ones that are offered out there for free, because they may end up bringing you more ad blockers or more ads that aren't being blocked. It's unfortunate that there are people that have to spoil it for everybody else. I don't know what it is that they get out of it by doing so. Getting for USA says from the Possum Hour. Oh, okay. All right. When is that? Is that here on Blog Talk, or is that a website? Let that person answer. Waiting here, I think. Let's see. From the Possum Hour, I'm getting for USA. Is that? Do you have a show here on Blog Talk, or is that the website that you got it from? Well, I don't think it's a website. Never mind. I think if it was, you probably would have mentioned so. Oh, on Blog Talk. Okay. So Getting for USA has a show called Possum Hour, or From the Possum Hour. All right. We'll have to check that out. go ahead, if you wouldn't mind putting in the time that it starts and the day and all of that good stuff. And then if you want to call in and plug your show, I'd be more than happy to give you the call. Absolutely. And that way you can tell us all about it. The more we connect and the more we share, the more information can get distributed, whatever it is that you're talking about, it's always good to promote within. So we'll wait for that. Oh, you were in chat last week. I probably was. I like to bounce around a lot and listen to the other shows and what they have to talk about. I'm not real keen on the media that's being put out there, and a lot of times I find some interesting information either on Blog Talk or, you know, other alternative news forms. So that's good. Okay. So we have the internet and we have these clickbait, and then we have our lovely federal government, and some of them mean well and others, it's hard to say. Do they really mean well? Because they seem to be like the, what do they call it, the helicopter mother that just wants to hover over, and because we can't take care of ourselves and we can't decide for ourselves what's truth and what's not truth. And so recently a congressional hearing was, oversight hearing was conducted with a subcommittee, which personally these subcommittees are just like the gatekeepers for the main committee. And I don't know what good that they do. They sit there and they preside over the panel and ask questions. I guess they pass it along to decide whether the committee is going to hear it or not. And if they decide not to, then what happens? I guess the people on the panel are left hanging. I don't know. Nevertheless, so I have some clips from that hearing because what I thought was very interesting is they were all kind of on the same page about the whole Russia thing and the ads that were on Facebook and Twitter and how can we combat that and removing RT News and their propaganda within our United States. And so very interesting stuff that they were discussing, which was basically our open and free internet that it's supposed to be, which has people turning to the deep net. And there's the dark net and there's the deep net. So that's where the rabbit hole comes in a little bit later. So much to discuss. Okay, let's get started with the first clip. First clip is Chairman Pai from the FCC under President Trump. Now, the FCC is a separate agency away from the government, our federal government. However, there are persons in Congress that do want to try and control the FCC and believe that they have that power until they have been put in their place. So Chairman Pai so eloquently lets them know that we are separate. You can recommend and suggest and anything else, but we make the final note about our policies and how we regulate. So here is Chairman Pai.
The order of seniority. So Chairman Pai, you will be first, followed by Commissioner Clyburn, and then Mr. O'Reilly, Mr. Carr, and Ms. Rosenworcel. So, Chairman Pai, you are recognized for 5 minutes for an opening statement.
Thank you, Chairman Blackburn, Ranking Member Doyle, members of the subcommittee. Thank you for holding this hearing today. I appreciate this opportunity to update you on the FCC's work to advance the public interest. That work has been substantial. In my written statement, I outlined our progress in four key areas: promoting public safety, bridging the digital divide, modernizing our regulations, and combating unwanted robocalls. Additionally, I commended the subcommittee for its work on reauthorizing the FCC. Of particular importance is the provision just mentioned by Congresswoman Matsui that would allow the deposits placed by bidders in spectrum auctions to be sent to the Treasury. Without this measure, the FCC won't be able to launch a large spectrum auction for the foreseeable future. But this morning, I'd like to address an area of concern for all members and for me, the First Amendment. I have said again and again and again that the First Amendment must be at the heart of our work. That is why I opposed the prior FCC's Critical Information Needs Study, an ill-conceived initiative which would have involved sending government-funded agents into newsrooms to second-guess editorial judgment. And that's why just last month I spoke at the museum about the importance of the First Amendment. My record on these issues is clear. And these issues are not new. President Kennedy targeted the Washington Post and NBC, directly telling one of my predecessors that a particular story was outrageous and to, quote, do something about it. More recently, some have said that the FCC should reject a transaction involving the transfer of FCC broadcast licenses because of editorial judgments. And six members of this very committee, including the current ranking members of the committee and subcommittee, once demanded that the FCC investigate a broadcaster based solely on the content of a documentary that they didn't like and that hadn't even aired. Let me be clear. I stand on the side of the First Amendment. I firmly believe that journalists should heed their viewers, their listeners, and their readers, not the dictates of officials in Washington, D.C. But don't just trust my words. For if you believe, as I do, that the federal government has no business intervening in the news, then we must stop the federal government from intervening in the news business. And that is why this afternoon I shared with my fellow commissioners an order that will reform our media ownership rules and help pull the government once and for all out of the newsroom. We will vote on this order at our November 16th meeting. The marketplace today is nothing like it was in 1975. Newspapers are shutting down. Many radio and TV stations are struggling, especially in smaller and rural markets. Online competition for the collection and distribution of news is even greater than it ever was. And just two internet companies claim 100% of recent online advertising growth. Indeed, their digital ad revenue alone this year will be greater than the market cap of the entire broadcasting industry. And yet the FCC's rules still presume that the market is defined entirely by pulp and rabbit ears. As one newspaper has put it, making the argument that the current rules are outdated is easy. That radical right-wing rag was the New York Times in 2003. Now, if this order is adopted, the FCC will belatedly recognize reality and match our rules to the modern marketplace. First, the order will once and for all eliminate the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule. As President Clinton's first FCC chairman has explained, under current conditions in the media business, the FCC's rule is perverse. And the Third Circuit has said that it remains at, quote, significant expense to pro-competitive arrangements. Second, the item will eliminate the radio-television cross-ownership rule, which is unnecessary in today's marketplace, given the Commission's separate local radio and local television ownership rules. Third, it will revise the local television ownership rule to eliminate the eight voices test and incorporate a case-by-case review of the top four prohibition. This better reflects the competitive conditions in local markets. Fourth, it will eliminate the attribution rule for television joint sales agreements, finding that JSAs serve the public interest by allowing broadcasters to better serve their local markets. Fifth, it will retain the disclosure requirement for shared services agreements involving commercial television stations. And sixth, it will finally establish an incubator program to encourage greater diversity in and new entry into the media business and seek comment on what the details of that program should be. And, unlike under the prior administration, I have ordered that the text of this decision be made publicly available tomorrow, 3 weeks before we vote on it. That, too, is news that is fit to print. Chairman Blackburn, Ranking Member Doyle, members of the committee, thank you once again for holding this hearing, and I look forward to answering your questions.
We thank the chair.
That was awesome, because if you saw the actual hearing when it took place, you still can see it on C-SPAN. I left the link there on my page. But some of the faces went sour as he was listing down his rules, and others were ignoring him, talking amongst themselves, and I thought, wow, what a joke. And yet later they, you know, at the beginning when the FCC was seeking reauthorization, they were really picking on him about why he was taking apart the net neutrality and they should he it's working and he should leave it in place and blah blah blah, and it's not working, and I'm glad he took it apart, and I'm also glad that he is standing true to himself as far as posting things so that people can review them, comment on whatever it is that he plans on doing, and we'll see what happens with that if he responds to the comments and reviews of the policy. So, you know. Oh, okay, cool. I've got my Pepsi here and USA. Woohoo. Just getting their cup of coffee. So excellent. Most excellent. Well, so Chairman Pai's been like battling with these people and this subcommittee, these nobodies in Congress, just for his position, basically, for the things that he wants to do. And this next clip is very interesting because he has a tiff back and forth with with Representative Ishu from California, of all places. Of course, California's got to be the one. But so Pai, if you recall, was talking about Kennedy and what he did with the New York Times and the other newspapers, and how when he didn't like what they said, you know, he didn't want them around anymore. So here's Ms. Ishu and how she responds to that.
Woman yells back, but he's not in the running for the prize. Okay, Ms. Ishu, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and welcome to you, Mr. Chairman, and all of the commissioners. Commissioner Carr, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Clyburn, it's always an honor to have you here at the committee and to know you. Commissioner O'Reilly, terrific to have. Keep the Irishman together. Here you have a set of bookends. And to Commissioner Rosenworcel, it is really terrific to have you back. And I think that all represents a win for the American people, hopefully. Mr. Chairman, I've been debating something inside of myself, so I'm just going to make a statement. I don't want to go on and on about it, but I need to say something to bring together President Kennedy with Donald Trump. I don't think is palatable, and I'm just going to leave it there. You know, Mr. Chairman, that I've raised deep concerns about RT. Our intelligence community is determined with high confidence. That is the highest level of agreement between all of the agencies that they interfered in our democracy. The intelligence community described them as the Kremlin's, quote, principal in international propaganda outlet. I wrote to you on May 8th, urging you to consider applying broadcast transparency requirements to state-sponsored media outlets like RT so the American people would know whether foreign governments are behind the content they're reviewing. I found your response to be ambiguous, and most frankly, I don't think you answered my questions. And it's curious that I get a response to my letters at about 6:30 in the evening, the night before of the day of we're going to have a hearing with you. I think that this is a very serious issue. The intelligence community and all of the members of the House participated in that briefing. It was a classified briefing, but there was also an unclassified report that was put out. And that unclassified report was replete with RT. Now, I don't know what I need to do to either impress upon you that this is a serious issue and that you take it seriously. So I want to ask you, will you commit to us that you'll apply or consider applying broadcast transparency requirements to state-sponsored media outlets like RT? And if not, why not?
Congresswoman, thank you for the question. As I understand the law, there is no jurisdictional hook at this point, no transfer of a license, for example, that allows the SEC to assert jurisdiction.
But what about those that have a license and carry them? Doesn't the FCC have any any say-so in that? Is this, as the intelligence community said, that they are a principal international propaganda outlet? So are they just going to operate in the United States no matter what?
Congresswoman, again, under the Communications Act and the Constitution, the First Amendment, we do not have currently a jurisdictional hook for taking doing an investigation of that kind. If you're privy to obviously classified or unclassified information that suggests that there might be another agency that has obviously a direct interest in the issue, and we're obviously happy to work with them, but at the current time, as I've been advised, neither under the First Amendment nor under the Communications Act do we have the ability to
Well, First Amendment applies to free speech in our country. It doesn't mean that that the Kremlin can distribute propaganda in our country through our airwaves. I don't know if you're looking hard enough. Maybe if Commissioner Carr were still the general counsel, he could advise you better. But I'm not going to give this up. I want to move to something else, and that is this issue on media consolidation. 3 years ago, Mr. Chairman, the commission voted unanimously to prohibit two stations in a market from jointly negotiating retransmission consent, and you were part of that unanimous vote. Now, by eliminating the duopoly rule, which reports indicate you're preparing to do next month, you would permit two of the top four stations in a market to merge. So how do you explain this?
Well, those reports are inaccurate, as I outlined in my opening statement, and as you will see tomorrow when we publish in unprecedented fashion the actual text of this document. We are doing a case-by-case review in particular markets.
So Sinclair, this will apply to Sinclair?
It applies to any broadcaster that seeks to enter into an agreement that otherwise would be in violation of the top four prohibition. So some had argued
73% dominance of a market. How does that fit? Where does that fit?
No, so some had argued we should just get rid of the top four prohibition.
Time has expired.
Well, he can answer the question.
Yes.
Some had argued that we simply get rid of the top four prohibition. My recommendation to our staff was to draft it so that there would be a case-by-case review. We would not get rid of it. We would review if there are particular facts that a particular broadcaster would bring to us and that presents a compelling case that combination would be in the public interest, then we'll take a look. But otherwise, the prohibition applies.
Time I wish I had more time.
She's something else, a piece of work. But again, she's from California. A couple of things there. First of all, the whole wanting the FCC to monitor the content of what's being distributed out to the public. Wouldn't that make him a form of a czar or something? I mean, somebody complained about the content. They didn't like this particular station. I mean, just because the president said that he doesn't like what's coming out of certain stations and that they should do this doesn't mean they're going to do it and that he has the right to even ask them to do it. He's just throwing it out there. He's been battling for so long now, and so his frustration is great, and I get that. And unfortunately, we've got all these, to control. So yes, very much so. And she's not the only one. There were others. Many others, too. There were three separate hearings with the FCC, the reauthorization one, and then there was the ad one that we're talking about now, and then there was another one with Google and Twitter and the ads that were – they had questioned those guys, too. And that was – there was more interesting stuff with this oversight hearing that they're having. And, control the content. RT News, they pay for their ads. That would affect our commerce, our trade, our however that works. That would affect the information flow. I mean, who's to say that we're never going to have a tyrannical government? God willing, we won't. But the possibility is there. Almost anything's possible. And if it ever happens, then we need to know information from outside sources outside of the U.S. And now she wants to have that controlled. Of course, he's not going for it. Thank goodness. Now, to explain what they're talking about with the two stations and that duplicity rule that they're talking about, if you're not understanding that, we have cable companies out there, internet companies, and, of course, the big ones, Time Warner and Comcast and so forth. Well, they put an end to the mergers because of the dominating and monopolizing and maintaining high rates for customers. So they stopped that. Now, what Chairman Pai was saying is that that rule will stand. And if there is something that needs to be reviewed, if a company comes to him, which makes sense because you may have two small companies in an area, that it would be better for them and the community if they merged in order to free up access to these people or to maintain lower rates. And so there are going to be circumstances. So you can't just shut the door on everything. It needs to be reviewed, and I think that's fair. But apparently not to this woman. Okay, let's see. We have more. We'll listen to Representative Crawford.
...that they used, and we need your help to do that. And I yield back.
Chairman yields back. Mr. Crawford, 5 minutes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stretch, I want to start with you. I want to switch gears a little bit. A few weeks ago, reports surfaced in multiple news outlets about Facebook having a desire to hire upwards of 1,000 additional personnel who would have top secret security clearances to handle sensitive information alongside law enforcement agencies in the wake of Russia's interference in our last election cycle. When I heard about that, obviously I'm concerned because we have north of 17 agencies in the federal government right now that gather intelligence and analyze that information, and those agencies already work with companies like yours and others here today. And I was also concerned by this report because as a committee, number one, we exercise oversight over those agencies to ensure that they're doing their jobs, and number two, that they're doing it legally. So my question is the reach and the impact that Facebook has in the lives of everyday citizens, the depth and breadth that your platform has. Average user somewhere in a 50-hour week range. Why do you think Facebook has a need for 1,000 individuals with security clearances when we already have intelligence agencies doing that work at the federal level? Can you answer that?
Congressman, we're not hiring 1,000 people with security clearances, but we do require people with security clearances for two reasons. One, there is expertise that often comes with a security clearance that helps us understand threats like we're talking about today. Second, and more concretely, there are national security-related law enforcement process issues that we have to navigate, and we need personnel with security clearances to allow us to engage in the appropriate dialogue with the authorities.
So 1,000, that's overstated. How many would you estimate that you would be bringing on with security clearances?
I don't have that number offhand. It would be in the single digits, potentially in the teens.
Well, that's interesting. That's not the report that I read, but that's okay. I'll take your word for it. What measures would you take to ensure that the American people can trust that you, being a social media platform, can adequately do what you just described, and our colleagues here on the Intelligence Committee and others who oversee that work can trust what you say and what you just described?
I'm sorry, Congressman. Can you repeat the question?
Well, basically what I'm asking is that so you've got these individuals, you're saying in the teens, not in the 1,000 range as I read in a report, but in the teens, that you're acting in sort of interacting, if you will, with our existing intelligence community. What steps are you taking, and what does that interaction look like, and how can we be certain that, in fact, it's being done and we're able to exercise oversight over you if necessary?
I understand. Thank you for the question. The primary function we're describing involves the issuance of law enforcement process pursuant to statutory authority that put safeguards in place for the potential subjects of, for example, surveillance. I would think that through this committee's oversight of the intelligence community and their exercise of those authorities would come with an understanding of how they engage with companies and how the companies themselves are responding to process.
I'd probably like to get Mr. Walker, if you would weigh in on that same issue. I don't know if you have plans of hiring additional personnel with security clearances to the same end that we just discussed with Mr. Stretch, but your thoughts on that and that role going forward.
Sure. We have a very limited number of people with security clearances, again, to facilitate this kind of exchange with government as well as for government contracting purposes. We think that that exchange of information is quite valuable in terms of getting additional government leads to allow us to expand our investigation as appropriate.
Mr. Edgett, would you like to comment?
We do similar sharing and have a good working relationship with law enforcement on the ground on these issues. I don't know how many or if any have security clearances, but we are also sharing information back and forth.
You can probably imagine or anticipate that folks, as they understand that it's public that you have individuals within your platforms working for you that have security clearances and you're interacting with the intelligence community, that might be give them pause. And you see that folks, average user, might be concerned about that you might then be perceived as a de facto intelligence agency? Mr. Stretch?
I can understand the concern, and I can assure you, Congressman, that any information we provide to the intelligence community is pursuant to lawful process that we examine closely.
Thank you. I'm out of time. Yield back.
Gentlemen's time has expired.
Hey, Mr. Frost.
5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony today.
Okay, so how does Facebook rate hiring security from the agencies, from our security agencies, or when I say our federal government? Interesting. I think the report that the congressman, even though he said that he would take Facebook's word for it, is probably more accurate than what the Facebook CEO person is saying. If the report says this because he knows how many security personnel are going to be working for them, well, or that they requested, I don't know. Because 1,000 seems like an awful lot. It seemed to me he was stalling for an answer. Can you please, Congressman, repeat that question? I don't have an answer, and I have to think of one. And stall with the I love that. What's really going on? Google, Facebook, YouTube, all together, working together. And we already know that they pretty much work for the government. So I don't know what he felt like he was hiding. But I guess Mr. Stitch. What a name, Mr. Stitch. This is a lot of information that people don't get to know about. And then policies or regulations or whatever is done behind the scenes. We never know about it. It's unfortunate that it's not like on regular TV where you could turn it on and know that it's going to be on whenever they have it. Maybe every Thursday they can put a schedule out. And yes, you can see it on C-SPAN or YouTube, but people who don't have access to internet, and there still are a lot of people who don't, it seems odd, but it's true, would be able to access it through public access television. So if you didn't have cable, you have the little rabbit ears or digital box that they have out now that you can use, that you would be able to do that. People need to be informed about what's going on, especially involving the internet, because that's basically our last source of information that is pretty much unlimited at the moment. At the moment. And you do have to know where to look. So we have, from this particular committee hearing, one more. Let's see, Mr. Hurd. Where'd he go? Aha, there he is. Chairman Hurd. He's an ex-CIA person. He's a Republican, and he's chairing this particular meeting. And so we'll hear from him. This one's a little bit long, so I might chime in here and there while he's talking. But what he does have to say, though, is very important. So, I don't know. We got to run to the restroom, go do so, grab something to drink, I don't know. The clip is 10 minutes, 36 seconds. And I usually don't like to put any type of clips longer than 5 is like the maximum. Because I know it can get boring on the other end listening. But then again, when the information is good, what can you say? So here is Chairman Hurd.
Russia, by an ad saying come to Moscow on broadcast television.
There is no restriction which prohibits a foreign government from buying an ad. I think there would be a restriction on them buying an ad, which would be explicit advocacy, because that would be illegal under U.S. election laws.
So the Russian government, if they wanted to buy an ad on broadcast that said, don't send weapons to Ukraine, what would govern
that? There are disclosure requirements, and I'm certainly no expert in the disclosure requirements with respect to foreign participation in U.S. media. But other than that, assuming they comply with those disclosure requirements, there is no prohibition on their speaking in the U.S.
Does the Foreign Agent Registration Act have anything to do with that disclosure or that purchase of
That's exactly what I was referring to.
Gotcha. Mr. Chavern, can the Russians run a political advertisement in the newspaper of saying, don't send guns to the Ukraine?
I believe it would not count as express advocacy,
If they said, call your congressman and tell them don't support sending guns, American guns, to the Ukraine.
Tedros, once you get into issue advocacy, I would have the same question as Mr. Goodman about foreign agent.
Mr. Rothenberger, can the Russians run a digital ad that tells you to call your congressman and tell them not to support sending American guns to the Ukraine?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not an expert on that, so I cannot answer that question.
Mr. Vandewalker, do you have an opinion on either one of those three scenarios that I just brought up?
So one of the things that could get at that is the political file requirement, which would, again, not be a prohibition, but would be a
So let me ask you, is there some piece of law, court case, that regulates whether the Russian government could buy a ad on print, broadcast, or digital that says, call your congressman and tell them to not send guns to Ukraine?
Not that I'm aware of. Although,
and just for the record, I'm supportive of sending guns to the Ukraine. I just want to make that clear.
Right. I mean, it could be an electioneering communication if it were 60 days within an election and mentioned someone running for re-election.
Mr. Dickerson, your opinion on one of those three scenarios?
I mean, my opinion is I'm pleased to finally hear the federal or the Foreign Agent Registration Act raised, because it basically is a political file. I mean, this is a law that requires, you know, essentially any, and it's a very broad definition of political public communication, at very low dollar thresholds, to be filed with the Department of Justice, to have physical copies of the ad filed with the department, to have a disclaimer on the front of the ad saying it's being paid for by a foreign government. I think a lot of the tragedy of this conversation is that in our efforts to get at Russian activity, we're ignoring the tool that is directed at foreign actors and instead trying to expand laws that by definition impact American political speech. And given the scope of the existing FARA and the fact that it could be expanded if it was this committee's interest to not only foreign agents but also foreign principals, that strikes me as a much narrower, much more constitutionally defensible way of building the political file that's being discussed here, precisely because it's targeted at foreigners and not Americans.
So right now, your understanding of FARA is that it's for agents of the government. It doesn't include principals of the government.
That's my understanding.
Mr. Raskin, you're now recognized.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'm going to follow up on your questions. And as I'm listening to the testimony, I recognize that what's at stake here really is the integrity of liberal democracy in our century. Vladimir Putin and his agents understood they could not compete with us militarily, they could not compete with us economically, and they could not compete with us politically on a fair stage, because they've got nothing to sell but tyranny and despotism and kleptocracy. But he detected a little bit of an Achilles heel in the United States, which is our openness. And specifically our openness, our freedom of expression on the internet, which might be the most wide open of all of the forums and media that we have. And so He took advantage of that. And I think everybody here agrees that we were caught sleeping. And there were hundreds of thousands of dollars, perhaps millions of dollars spent to invade every nook and cranny of the internet in order to inject poison into our political process and to try to gerrymander the outcome of our election. Now, let me ask this. First of all, can we do this in reverse? For example, would we be allowed to spend whatever money we wanted, either as a government or private entities in the United States, in Saudi Arabia, in Iran, in Russia, in the Philippines? Do the authoritarian societies allow people from the liberal democracies to access their public with such ease? Does anybody have an answer to that? Mr. Rothenberg?
Well, yes, for generations we did that through the Voice of America and various other arms of the United States government and did it very effectively.
But what about the purchase of TV ads in Saudi Arabia or Iran or Russia, the purchase of radio ads? I understand there is the Voice of America, which is announced, which is disclosed, and it clearly comes from the United States. But what about the kind of surreptitious penetration of the public consciousness that took place in 2016 here?
Well, history shows us that we have all played games in each other's countries with each other's media for generations. I'm not defending it or decrying it. I'm just stating a fact that I think we're all aware of.
Yeah, and there's no doubt the U.S. government has intervened to destabilize democracies, as in Chile, as in Iran, and that's something, obviously, that real small-D Democrats oppose and have tried to stop in our history. But perhaps we need some kind of global understanding about giving the people of every society the right first to free and fair elections in democratic government, and then the right to pursue those elections without covert interference by foreign nations. Let me ask this question. The FICA makes it unlawful for any foreign national, directly or indirectly, to make a contribution or donation in connection with a federal, state, or local election. That doesn't use the language of express advocacy. It says any contribution or donation in connection with an election. Would it be within the constitutional authority and province of Congress to ban, and I think perhaps the chairman was asking this question too, not just express advocacy spending by foreign nationals, corporations, and governments, but also any political advertising taking place during the election season? Would we have the authority to do that to foreign nationals on the theory that they don't enjoy the First Amendment rights of the American people, or indeed of, I think, even permanent residents of the country, people who are here and are part of the country? Does anybody have an opinion on that?
I think the problem, Congressman, is less a matter of the First Amendment than a matter of vagueness. I mean, as I know you're aware, you know, the Supreme Court in Buckley said that precisely that language was unconstitutionally vague in the sense that actors couldn't, as a matter of due process, determine what was and wasn't covered. This is the danger with these sort of words like...
Right. Well, we've drawn a line between express advocacy and then just generalized political advocacy, but because the line exists, we've got two separate categories, and our campaign laws apply for American citizens on one side, but not the other, but perhaps they could apply on both sides for people or entities, foreign governments and corporations that decide they want to get involved in our elections. What do you think about that?
Well, I think we're already there. I mean, express advocacy is banned by foreigners and foreign governments.
But we want to go beyond that to all political spending during our campaigns. For example, it turns out that the Russian government cleverly got itself involved with alt-right activities. It tried to get involved with Black Lives Matter. It was doing everything possible to exasperate tensions in our country, which we live with to this very day.
I would think the Department of State would have views on this. From the point of view of the First Amendment, That is probably permissible, provided that things are defined in a way that is understandable. And frankly, Congress has a bad track record on
it. And of course, they have the right to speak voluntarily and freely through public platforms where they're announced, and they've got a right to do a Facebook page, which is not the spending of any money. But it just seems to me that when we talk about the expenditure of money in the political system, that's where it gets to be very dangerous, because you can't rerun an election. One contaminated election can take a country down a very dark road. I yield back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Amazing. Amazing. With all the information that's come out, there's one side of the aisle that persists on ignoring it as though it never happened. The dossier never happened. The DNC stealing the election or stealing the primary from Bernie Sanders never happened. Unbelievable. We're going to be right back after this short break. Hello, Suzette LT here. You can replay this episode or previous episodes by entering the web address blogtalkradio.com/Suzette Live Talk. It's free to listen in part or whole. Don't forget to tune in next week to Suzette Live Talk for discussion, big and small. We discuss them all Sundays at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So join me, Suzette LT. That sounds so cheesy. Okay, so we're back. If you're just tuning in, this is Suzette LT. You're welcome to chime in at 619-924-0847. So now that we've heard a little bit about what's going on there with the congressional hearings, I have a few questions for you. Should the federal government get involved in passing some form of legislation to prevent any type of foreign entities interfering with anything in our country? Because basically, once they do it, it'll involve everything, whether it's propaganda or something else. So should they get involved Or should they just leave it alone? Should they get the FCC involved? Because technically, the internet is controlled by the FCC or under the FCC. By removing the net neutrality, it also removed the internet from being placed under the telecommunications laws, which is good because it's not telecommunications. Of course, technology is always ahead of any type of rules or regulations or policies, so they need to be dealt with along the way. You just can't sweep it under one and say, okay, so those rules apply when they're different. Another question, now if we do have the legislation passed by Congress to eliminate foreign actors or start monitoring clickbait and punishing those people, what would be the consequences of those actions that are taken? A lot of times we fail to ask these questions, regular people and Congress. And things are done, signed, sealed, delivered, and then we see the repercussions. Oh, we didn't foresee that. Oh, we didn't think about that. And I have to ask, did you think at all? Or were you just looking at the problem and trying to just quick fix? So, those are my questions to you tonight, if you want to give me, oh, I see, Norway. Hey, how you doing? Welcome. Fantastic. Good to see you. Tonight we're talking about, I started off with the clickbait, because basically clickbait is also in the purview of Congress. People are getting annoyed with being redirected to other websites or fake websites or hijacked websites. So, it's unfortunate. Yeah, I know. But there's going to be things that are going to occur that we don't like. And sometimes you're able to figure out which is which. And then other times we get nailed. You know, you click on something, it sounds interesting. Boom, you're sent to someplace else. Anyway, so they're working with that. They're working with these Russian ads with Facebook. And Facebook is hiring security personnel from our agencies, our intelligence agencies, and they don't talk about what their use is particularly for. Basically, they said that it was to help with the legal process and the dialogue with law enforcement. And when I heard that at first, I went, what? Are you kidding me? Uh-huh. Unbelievable. So we've got a few more clips to go through, and then we're going to go explore the other side of the rabbit hole. I've got some good stuff for that, too. And I even have a congressional report that was recently put together. It was in March of this year. So we'll get a little bit from that, too, as well. So we will return to, what is it? I have two more clips. Excuse me. And then that will finish, that will conclude that segment. So we are going to listen to Representative Paloon. Ooh, Paloon. Paloon me.
Back, Mr. Paloon, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My questions are to Chairman Pai, and I want to discuss your reaction to the President's attacks on the press. And I have a number of questions, so if you could keep your answers to yes or no, I'd appreciate it. Mr. Chairman, are you aware that the President said, and I quote, "Network news has become so partisan, distorted, and fake that licenses must be challenged and, if appropriate, revoked"?
Is that from the tweet?
Yes. The question is, are you aware of that quote?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, are you aware that the President said, and again I quote, "It is frankly disgusting the press is able to write whatever it wants to write and that the New York Times, NBC News, ABC, CBS, and CNN are the enemy of the American people," that he said that. Are you aware?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you think that these types of statements are appropriate for the President of the United States to make?
Congressman, I'm going to speak to my own views in my own words, and my views are that I stand with the First Amendment. I'm not going to characterize the views of anybody else.
But, Mr. Chairman, you did say on another occasion, and I quote, that the American people are being misled about President Obama's plan to regulate the Internet, right? You said that.
because that was a direct compromise of the agency's independence on a particular pending issue where the agency was already heading in a different direction.
But if you're not shy about speaking out against President Obama, why would you condemn it? Let me ask you this. Would you condemn attacks on the press if they had come from President Obama?
Congressman, I always focus on the facts and the law. That is our job in terms of licensing.
Well, I just think it's a double standard here, but before coming to the SEC, you worked for then-Senator Jeff Sessions, correct?
Yes, sir.
Are you aware that when asked if he would, and I quote, jail reporters for doing their job, he said he cannot make a blanket commitment to that effect?
I'm not aware of that. I hadn't heard that.
Well, he said it. When you spoke at the Mercatus Center last week, did you say, and I quote, under the law, the FCC doesn't have the authority to revoke a license of a broadcast station based on the content of a particular newscast?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Do you understand why reporters might be concerned when the Attorney General and the Chairman of the FCC leave open the threat of punishment and even jail time?
Congressman, I wasn't familiar with General Sessions' statements, and I'm certainly not familiar with the perceptions of journalists. All I'll simply say is that this FCC stands on the side of the First Amendment, and that includes the ability of journalists to gather news as they see fit.
But the problem is that the people raising this issue, Mr. Chairman, are concerned that your silence or your overly lawyered responses contribute to a culture of intimidation that can chill free speech. And so, you know, that's why I'm trying to clear the air, because I'm concerned about the impact of, you know, either silence or overly lawyered response. At the Mercatus Center, you said that you would not act based on a particular newscast. Would you revoke a license based on multiple newscasts?
No.
Okay. Now, I have here a working paper. I don't know if it's in the record, Madam Chairman, so I might have to ask you if we can enter the record.
Order.
I have a working paper produced by the Mercatus Center. In this working paper, the center suggests the FCC is able to threaten free speech through other mechanisms like license transfers. Do you commit that your commission will not threaten broadcasters' license transfers based on the content of the reporting?
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you commit that your commission will not launch investigations into companies based on the content of the reporting?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you commit that your commission will not launch investigations into companies based on the content of the reporting?
Yes.
Okay. Do you commit that your commission will not take any acts of retribution against companies based on the content of the reporting?
Oh,
yes.
Okay,
real.
And well, let me look. I appreciate, you know, working that out, because I think that's important. So finally, Chairman Pai, when you first took office, you committed to me that you would be responsive to Congress, even if a request came from Democratic members. Now, I've heard complaints from my colleagues that your responses to a number of their letters have also been non-substantive and evasive. You've even avoided multiple times answering my questions about allegations involving your relationships with Sinclair Broadcasting, including refusing to even answer my letters. So let me just say, we're going to look into your continued evasiveness on some of these important issues, including Sinclair. And I just want you to know that I'm not happy, and I'm not going to tolerate, the agency not responding to us, because I don't really feel they have with regard to Sinclair and so many other issues. That's just my opinion. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Gentlemen, y'all.
Jerk. Oh, it was sometimes very frustrating listening to these people. Unbelievable. Chairman Pai had to reaffirm how many times? I lost count. And the question that he asked him about Obama and Trump, they're two separate. They're apples and oranges, although he tried to put them in the same category. I heard superiority. I heard condescension. I heard dissension from Congressman Paloon towards Chairman Pai. Whether or not that has to do with anything that has to do with Donald Trump and him being the new chairman under Donald Trump. My guess is yes. Oh, yes. Definitely yes. So we're going to finalize this. We've got one last one, and then we're finished with this segment, Representative Sabines. I might end up cutting his short. We'll find out here. Okay, let's find out.
The gentleman from Maryland, Mr. Sarbanes, you're now recognized for 5 minutes.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman, for permission to participate today in the hearing. Thank you for taking this issue as seriously as you have. And also want to thank Ranking Member Kelly for her focus on this. And I want to thank my colleague, Derek Kilmer from Washington, for his leadership on the Honest Ads Act, which I think is a critical step as we prepare for the elections next week, next year. Although it could be next week, it seems like it's coming fast and furious, and that's why we need to get ready for it. I just want to, is there anyone on the panel who thinks that right now we have an adequate level of disclosure with respect to spending on political advertisements on online platforms to be ready for the next election? Does anyone think that disclosure is adequate? Mr. Dickerson. I predicted you would be the one who said you do. But I don't see anybody else. Let the record show. I don't think it's adequate. I think that if we're going to be ready, as you were saying, Mr. Rothenberg, we've got to anticipate what comes next. It's hard sometimes to do that, but I would think putting a baseline regime of disclosure in place with respect to what's happening online would be one thing that we could do to be more ready than we are now. And so we're obviously going to encourage our colleagues to continue to push very hard for this kind of disclosure, which, as the hearing has indicated, is not out of line with the expectations that have been created with respect to the broadcast industry over time. And the public, I think, has indicated through polling data that it wants to see this kind of information as well. I'm curious what you would say about whether advertisers should be allowed to make money from foreign election interference. I mean, how would you answer that question, Mr. VandeWalk? Do you think that advertisers should be able to make money on foreign interference in our elections?
Well, I mean, I think within reason we should be preventing foreign interference in our elections, and It logically follows from that companies shouldn't be able to make a profit from it.
Any others?
Yes, I think the question really needs to be refocused, because the issue is not whether, for example, somebody makes money off an ad, but whether an advertiser that's foreign is permitted to participate in U.S. elections. And I think that is one of the issues that if there is going to be further disclosure requirements needs to be addressed, which is that online platforms like broadcasters have no enforcement authority. If the Boris and Natasha, who have been mentioned before, they say, yes, we're U.S. citizens or we have a U.S. company, they don't, either an online platform or a newspaper or a TV station, have no way really to determine whether that's accurate.
I think
this has to be a government responsibility.
But I do think it goes to the question of what kind of expectation we should have from the advertisers themselves, what sort of responsibility they should carry to promote this kind of disclosure, to keep track of these kinds of things. I don't think, as you indicated, Mr. Rothenberg, that we can, for example, rely on campaigns to enforce these standards. I don't think that's realistic. I think the advertisers or the platforms that are receiving these purchase advertisements are better positioned to do that. It may not be easy out of the gates to construct these new regimes or algorithms, but they can construct algorithms for just about everything else in the world. They should be able to do this in order to enhance disclosure. I'm going to run out of time, so I wanted to ask one other question of you, Mr. VandeWalker, and that is, the FEC takes a lot of hits these days, and in certain regards, it is not functioning in the way it should. But there are some things that the FEC is able to do pretty well. It collects information that's submitted by campaigns every quarter. It digests that, and it produces it in a very accessible way on its online platform, so people can go there and get information about what's happening in terms of the spending on the campaigns themselves. So do you have any reason to think that the FEC would not be able to handle the responsibility of administering what's being envisioned under the Honest Ads Act in terms of information being collected, public files being produced, that being put in a place where the public can see it easily. Isn't that a function that the FEC could undertake at this point?
Yes, as you mentioned, that's one of the things that the FEC is actually good at, and they recently revamped the public face of those disclosures, making them more searchable online, and certainly policies could be developed in cooperation with social medias of the world who are very good at putting things online, I think, to make it all feasible and usable.
Thank you. I yield back.
Thank you. I recognize myself for another 5 minutes. Mr. Dickerson, I want to follow up on something Mr. Vanderwalker said. Does a Russian in Russia have First Amendment rights in the United States?
Russian in Russia certainly has fewer First Amendment rights than an American, or than a Russian would have on American soil.
Gotcha. Mr. Goodman, can the government of Russia buy an ad saying, come to Moscow, on broadcast television?
There is no restriction which prohibits a foreign government from buying an ad. I think there would be a restriction on them buying an ad, which would be explicit advocacy, because that would be illegal under U.S. election laws.
So the Russian government, if they wanted to buy an ad on broadcast that said, don't send weapons to Ukraine, what would govern
that? There are disclosure requirements, and I'm certainly no expert in the disclosure requirements with respect to foreign participation in U.S. media. But other than that, assuming they comply with those disclosure requirements, there is no prohibition on their speaking in the U.S.
Gentleman yields back. Mr. Lance, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman Blackburn. Good afternoon to members of the commission. And regarding the First Amendment, let me say that I think you, Chairman Pai, and all members of the commission are devoted to the First Amendment, as of course we are in Congress. I'm proud that New Jersey was the first state to ratify the Bill of Rights in 1791. Regarding President Kennedy, you mentioned President Kennedy, Chairman Pai, in the Washington Post. Before you were born, and I would imagine before any member of the commission was born, and when I was a little boy, John Kennedy canceled his subscription to the Herald Tribune, the great Republican newspaper in New York, and my late father, who was involved in public policy in New Jersey, sent him a subscription to the Herald Tribune, and we have in our family files a very sarcastic and curt letter back from Pierre Salinger saying we should stay out of the subscription business of the White House. And so from my perspective, all presidents on occasion criticize various news agencies. I don't find it necessarily attractive. My reading of American history is that this is done by various presidents, and I have great confidence in you, Chairman Pai, and in members of the commission in this regard.
Thank you, Congressman.
To Commissioner Carr and Commissioner Rosenworcel, congratulations on your confirmation. Commissioner Rosenworcel, you recently applauded the Airwaves Act introduced by Senators Gardner and Hassan for identifying more spectrum that can be made available for wireless broadband.
As far as our internet and Congress, clickbait, Russia, they actually had ads, these congressmen, posted in the back of them. In the committee hearing showing the different ads that Russia had posted, how much money that they had supposedly spent, and what proxies that they used to distribute these ads. And in actuality, what some of these congressmen were saying as far as it reaching millions of people, it did reach millions, but that's a drop in the bucket. They didn't say how many millions, and it was close to, I think it was 5 million, 10 million people, but out of all of those people that did see those ads, I know that there were some that had a brain. And what's wrong with agreeing with some of the stuff that they may have been saying that may have held true for our beliefs? You know, you talk about patriotism. You can be a patriot in Russia if you're a Russian. You can be patriotic to your country of origin, you know. We're patriots for the United States. So, I don't know. It just bothers me sometimes. The other half is Scottish-Irish. Oh, okay. That's my husband. Good combination. Love it. Love it, love it. Okay, so onward to the deep web, dark web. You know, there's actually two of them. I didn't know that until I started looking into this subject, because I'd come across a YouTube video, of course, by Anonymous. And there was a guy that had looked into the deep and dark web and what goes on there. Then, of course, the congressional report that I'm talking about from Congress about the deep dark web and what they say about that. Here it is. I have the link in the on my page there if you wish to click on that and take a look-see or not. It's up to you. It's called the Congressional Research Service Dark Web. And it's by Kristen Finklia, specialist in domestic security, March 10th, 2017. So she begins to talk about what each one is and what they do. She even has a table of contents on there describing the different categories of information that she had researched. And throughout this document and throughout law enforcement, local and federal government, state government, they want to put the fear in you that the dark web, the deep web, well, dark web definitely, some bad actors there. But the deep web isn't the dark web. They're different layers. They talk about Tor, which is the onion layers, and that's because of they peel back the layers of the internet. We have the surface, which are the typical search engines like Bing and Google, and they have indexed content. So when you type something into the search box, it takes you to a lot as far as a page that has tag words that fulfill what you typed in and give you that information, and you can choose what it is that you're looking for from that list. The deep web is not indexed, and it's done for the purpose of anonymity. And if it was indexed, then you would have IPS addresses that can be found or recognized, and they wouldn't be anonymous. Not everybody on the deep web is there for nefarious purposes, but the government and law enforcement would have you believe that because of the fact that if you go down to that layer of in the internet, they can't find you. Now, just because you don't want to be found doesn't mean you're up to no good. It just means don't bother me. I mean, you go in your house and don't bother me. I don't give you a looking glass to see what I'm doing, even if I'm doing nothing wrong. I just don't want to be bothered. I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing, good or bad, but for the most part, you don't have to be doing something bad to be there. In fact, there are reaches in other countries communicating with other people, talking about different things. There's a market for items that you can purchase a lot less. And I'm not talking about drugs. I'm just talking about regular things, golf clubs. I don't know. There's regular people there. It's not as big, but it's growing. There's an increasing, fan base, user base that's catching on like wildfire. And the government doesn't like this because they can't watch you. They can't control you. They don't know what you're doing, and it's driving them nuts. So they're putting the fear in people. Don't go there. Pedophiles are there. People trafficking are there. Prostitutes are there. Drug people are there. Oh, bad, bad, bad. Don't go there. Don't even look at it. Don't even look at it. Just ignore it. We can't have you go there. Fear, debt, and war. It's what people are controlled by. And in this case, it's fear. Because of all the horrible, deep things, and then when they label it dark or deep net, oh gosh, horrible, so horrible. It's not that horrible. The FBI was able to bring down the Silk Road back in 2013, but what you didn't know was back in 2013 as well, is that Congress was entertaining the thought of embracing Bitcoin. Bitcoin is used as currency in the deep or dark web to purchase things. Apparently, they thought by embracing Bitcoin and promoting it, that that would get them in the deep web. They didn't understand it, so they thought it was something that you got in. So, you know, hey, let's be pals. Hey, introduce me to your friends so we can penetrate. Originally, it was the government, the naval, fear is the most, yes, fear is the most powerful toolbox. Absolutely, absolutely, no way. And I'm not saying no way it isn't. I'm saying no way in the chat room. but it was, it's a government-created entity, believe it or not, this deep web. And then, of course, you know, we got computer geniuses, nerds, hackers, whatever you want to call them. God bless them. They figured it out. And so now they created an alternative or lower level, whatever you want to call it, deep web, for people to communicate and go about their lives on the internet without being seen. I don't think that's such a bad thing. I do think it is a bad thing when it's used for bad things, of course. I love my stage name. Not bad. I like it too. Let me see if I can find here where it's talking about the naval and the military and how it's used. Military and intelligence. I go down here to the page number 14. Where it talks about the naval people, you know, our military, our men's and women's over there getting sick, seasick, saving our lives. Okay. Military and intelligence, anonymity in the dark web can be used to shield military command and control systems in the field from identification and hacking by adversaries. Yes, that's true. And that's a good thing. Definitely. The military may use the dark web to study the environment in which it is operating, as well as to discover activities that present an operational risk to troops. Good. That's very good. For instance, evidence suggests that the Islamic State and supporting groups seek to use the dark web's anonymity for activities beyond information sharing. They use it for recruitment and propaganda dissemination, using Bitcoin to raise money for their operations. And she says, in its battle against ISIS, the Department of Defense can monitor these activities and employ a variety of tactics to foil terrorist plots. Good. So far it hasn't worked, though. That's unfortunate. You almost have to ask what it is that they're doing, and maybe they need to regroup. Because so far we haven't been foiling any type of terrorist attacks here or abroad. And we've been taking them out, for sure. But avoiding any terrorist attacks, I haven't heard of really yet. I know there's some, but questionable. Nevertheless, it says it's the TOR software, T-O-R, as I was saying. Software can be used by the military to conduct a clandestine or covert computer network operation, such as taking down a website, or a denial of service attack, or to intercept and inhibit enemy communications. Another use could be a military deception or a psychological operation, where the military uses the dark web to plant disinformation about troop movements and targets for counterintelligence, or to spread information to discredit the insurgents' narrative. These activities may be conducted either in support or of an ongoing military operation or a standalone basis. Could that be maybe, I don't know, used against us? Absolutely. Absolutely. If they, military, CIA, whoever it is that's working the deep state, if you will, learns how to really use this deep web, dark web, I don't think they really do. I think they would like to say they do only because they can't not know. It would be an embarrassment. And I think if they penetrated it, They could use that against us. Who knows? I mean, we already know that some of the CIA rogue people, not all of them, but there are rogues, you know, with software that can make it appear as though another country is doing bad things in another country, and they'll never be identified. Wars start that way, and it sucks, but it happens. So we have the DOD Defense and Advanced Research Projects Agency, and you may have heard it known as DARPA, D-A-R-P-A. And they're conducting a research project called MEMEX, M-E-M-E-X, to develop a new search engine that can uncover patterns and relationships in online data to help law enforcement and other stakeholders. Track illegal activity. Mm-hmm, sure. How about create a little illegal activity? I don't know. I'm jaded, I guess. Don't trust the government. You know, there's good ones, there's bad eggs, but I just don't trust them. Audio. Having problems with audio. Uh-oh. How about now? Okay now. Okay, I see. Okay now. Good. Oh, that's terrible. I hate that when that happens. BTR. Love you. Gotta love you. Let's see. Oh, okay. Noe says military had big problems with new age VoIP. Yes, V-O-I-P. Yes, with sound outdated systems. Mm-hmm. Obama upgraded the computers so they could get back into the dark. Oh, yes. Going dark, as they say. Absolutely. Imagine that. That's scary in anybody's wrong hands. You know, it's unfortunate these days. People start out good. Who knows what changes them besides greed and money? Is there anything else? No, I don't think so. Oh, power, greed, and the money. So they got to have the money in the hand, and they're never satisfied, so they just are greedy. Give it to me all, and I will have all the power to run it all on top of it. You got 4 years. They've got 4 years. If they're lucky, they get 8, and then they're out. I don't get it. So this dark web, deep, dark web, is not so bad. Don't be afraid. You can check it out with a tour. Nobody's going to hurt you there. When you visit the dark web, there are sites that you can avoid. You have to actually know the addresses in order to get to those sites. Some of them require passwords. Some of them don't. A lot of the services that are offered in the deep web don't require any type of personal information. It's all about anonymity. And it depends on where you go and where your interests are. So it's not like people are going to be, you're going to have all these pop-ups on your page of disgusting, horrid things that are being committed out there in the world by certain people. That's not what happens. You know, you pretty much will have, think of it as a queue blinking, and then you've got to put the information where you want to go. Okay, you do love your tour. Okay, so you know all about it then. Awesome. So it's not a bad thing, but we're being told that it is. So if you would like to call in and share your experiences with us, I would love it. I haven't dealt with it yet as far as participated or even downloaded the program. It says I've got 90 minutes or 90 seconds left. Oh, nuts. Never enough time. That sucks. Oh, okay. Well, there, I left the links on my page there. I encourage you to visit and listen, learn, read. Because if you don't, what happens? You need to be informed before being reformed. Otherwise, we're all going to be reformed robots. Same place, same thing. Like Del Taco. Never change. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. I have Getting for USA from Possum Radio. I have No Way Out Radio here tonight this evening. Thank you so much. Love you guys. God bless. Take care.